fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. UFC Central. UFC Central with Showdown Joe.
Are you ready?
Welcome to UFC Central. I'm your host, Showdown Joe. For the next hour, we're going to talk some mixed martial arts, UFC, and everything in between on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. And my apologies ahead of time for those that haven't heard just yet. I am fighting a bit of a cold, but we will endeavor to get the show done for the next hour to bring you up to speed on some of the latest and greatest from the world of mixed martial arts. Obviously, something that I caught over in Vancouver. My guest later on this towards the end of the show will be Spencer Kite. He'll be on in the second block. He's from the region as well. He's actually fighting a cold, so hopefully he'll be fine by the time we reach that part of the show to get him on the air. We're also going to hear from Jason Sago, who made his Octagon debut at UFC 174 in Vancouver. Victorious in the very first bout of the evening. If you saw it, you saw it on Sportsnet 360. I believe it also made it onto the prelims and maybe onto the pay-per-view, but he was victorious over Josh Shockley, who was also making his debut. Now, Jason did fantastic performance. We'll get his thoughts on the whole experience from getting the call to join the UFC and then competing for the very first time, which just so happens to be on the opposite side of the country because he's based out of Prince Edward Island. Not exactly a hotbed for mixed martial arts yet, but we'll get to that conversation with Jason momentarily. We'll also hear from Stephen Keynes. Now, Stephen Keynes is a revolutionary person in mixed martial arts, and I'll tell you why. He was brought to me by Reed Kuhn. You've heard Reed on this show on numerous occasions, Fightnomics, the consummate statistician in the world of mixed martial arts. His book, Fightnomics, is absolutely fantastic. And he was brought up to me that Mr. Keynes put together a glove, a mixed martial arts glove, does it as boxing as well, that has sensors. And the sensors can basically tabulate when you're throwing a jab, a cross, a hook. Now, for many people that don't know, I've been on this little bit of a kick recently, speaking to a whole bunch of people. More information will be coming out soon, but I sort of laid a seed out in Vancouver in one of the Q&As that I was hosting, most specifically the one I did with Matt Hughes, about I think there's going to be a change in the world of mixed martial arts, most specifically for regards to judging in the future, and it may not happen tomorrow, it may not happen within a month, it may not happen within 5 years. But in my opinion, the sport of mixed martial arts is already undergoing a change right now. We're not seeing it just yet, but I believe it will undergo a full change where bouts will not be judged anymore. They will be scored. For example, you walk into a bar, you want to watch the NBA Finals, you want to watch the World Cup, which is what we're in right now, you want to watch anything, Stanley Cup Finals, baseball, NBA, anything. When you walk into a bar or you turn your TV on at home, as soon as you put on the game or the event, you know exactly what the score is. The same thing, I believe, should happen in mixed martial arts. When you tune in, you should know exactly who's winning that fight. And that's obviously based on scoring. Punches landed, grappling techniques, octagon control, and there are ways to measure each one of these attributes. And one of those ways would be to measure punches, punches landed. And you can generate that. Stephen Keynes will explain it a little bit more in a moment or so, but imagine being able to turn on your television at home or walking into a bar, an establishment, a restaurant, and walking in it. You walk in the third round, and you know one guy's ahead 47-12, and his octagon control is 3 minutes above his opponent at 1 minute. Well, you know who's winning that fight right off the bat, as opposed to walking in there 3 minutes in to the third round. You have no idea what's going on, and then your judges are sitting there, and you're like, what are these judges going to say now? How many times have we seen judges? Most recently in Albuquerque, New Mexico, with the whole situation with Ross Pearson and Diego Sanchez. I mean, one judge gave all three rounds to Diego Sanchez, when in the second round, Diego was dropped by Ross Pearson. He was also taken down by Ross Pearson. That, in my opinion, he lose a round. It's a fact. But unfortunately, some judges don't see it that way. If you eliminate judging, you basically get into a situation where you're scoring. Now, what will it take for people to begin scoring in mixed martial arts? It will take some time. Don't get me wrong. It's going to take some time for people to be educated and to truly understand what it's all about. It's no different than anything else. It took people a while to understand what mixed martial arts was. Not everybody warmed up to the sport. It takes time. But over the evolution of the sport, we're seeing so many different things changing inside the octagon with the evolution of the fighters. The sport that one time had barely any rules and now has full-fledged rules, unified rules of mixed martial arts, weight classes, gloves, and all that jazz. I think the next evolution evolution of the sport will be scoring fights. Now, it's still a ways away. The more information I get, the more I will share with you. Trust me, mark my words, I really believe this is exactly where the sport is going to go. And I think it's a great idea because it eliminates subjectivity. You start getting the gloves, for example, that have these sensors that can differentiate between a power punch, between a jab. Same thing when you're grappling. I think the future, like I said, is scoring mixed martial arts bouts. Stay tuned. I believe it's really going to happen. Now, one guy you should be paying very close attention to is Jason Sagal, who did emerge victorious in Vancouver in a spectacular performance in his octagon debut versus Josh Shockley. Now, obviously, nerves for most guys heading into the octagon are pretty high. It's difficult to fight. You're at the big show. You've competed for so long on the grassroots level. Not so much for Jason Sagal. Jason Sagal's been around. And for those who don't know, if you missed the interview with him and I on Sportsnet.ca with Frank Tring, I mentioned that I shared a mat with him. But now I'm going to share the radio waves with him. Here he is right now, Jason Sagal. Mr. Sagal, how are you today?
I'm great. How about yourself?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. Obviously, you must be elated. I guess I'm assuming you've come down from the high after being successful in your octagon debut against Josh Shockley last Saturday?
Yes, things have settled down, and I've had time to process exactly what went down that night.
And what exactly did you process?
Just the whole experience, you know? It's just your dreams becoming a reality, just the entrance, the walk-in, to the octagon, winning, getting my hands raised. It was actually just one of those perfect debuts. It couldn't have gone any better for myself. No injuries. It went great.
Well, you're obviously Prince Edward's finest, or Prince Edward Island's finest, to say the least. Walk us through when you first got the call that you were officially in the UFC.
Oh, my girl, I actually checked my phone or whatever, and then she saw there's a message there and saying, call my manager right back. And then she called, and it was just super excited. And then for me, I didn't even think in. I wasn't believing it until probably the day after. I was like, holy crap, it is real. I'm going to be fighting in the UFC in about 4 weeks' time.
Walk us through when they said it was Josh Shockley as your opponent. Did you have any idea who that would be?
I heard of the name before, but I had to check him out on Sheridog and look at his record and stuff like that and see exactly, who he was, what his strengths were, where his skill set was. And I saw he was, 11 wins, 2 losses, majority of his wins by submission. And I felt like he was a very similar fighter to myself.
Now, when we were breaking down the fight, Frank Trigg and I, as we were watching it live, we were actually doing the TV show live, so we were able to turn around and pay attention to the fight. And I noticed that, Frank was mentioning how great you are getting that takedown, getting the mount position. I said, I don't think Jason wants mount. He could care less for mount. I think he's trying to get his back. And that's exactly what you were trying to do. Am I correct?
Yeah, I was trying to use my knee to help guide him to turn over, and then luckily he ended up turning over, and that's when I flattened him out and finished raining down a bunch of punches and then got the TKO.
Now, in terms of Prince Edward Island, it's obviously not necessarily a hotbed yet for mixed martial arts. What's the scene like for MMA there?
It's actually a good amount of well-rounded guys here. There's good strikers. Before we got to the island, there was primarily strikers, kickboxers, boxers, a couple of Muay Thai specialists. And now that Paul's been on the island, black belt under Hoyle Gracie, he's helped balance them out. So now they're getting really good ground skills as well. So it's a really good balance, different weight classes for fighters. I think we have about 7 or 8 pro fighters at our academy. So there's lots of great training partners here.
We're in conversation right now with Jason Sagal. Make sure you follow him online via Twitter, at Jason Sagal. Follow yours truly, at Showdown Joe. Now, we spoke after the fight or the evening about potentially returning to the octagon. I'm sure you don't have a schedule set just yet, but there is that show in Halifax. Is that one you're looking at potentially competing on?
Definitely. October 4th in Halifax. I got my eyes set on that one. And there's also another card in September, late September in Toronto. So I'd be pretty happy if I landed on either of those two cards.
Now, you obviously made a statement in your octagon debut where they finish in the first round. Did you have a conversation with Joe Silva or Sean Shelby at all?
Just briefly with Dana White, actually. After the fight, we just talked about it. He said, hey, man, great performance. He congratulated me. And he said, that's exactly what we need. So I was pretty happy that Dana White was pleased with my performance.
How did you get into mixed martial arts?
Way back in the day, it was 7 years ago when I was going to university, just messing around in the heavy bag, and my friend invited me to come try out a class.
Where was that?
That was University of Guelph.
University of Guelph. Oh, so you were in Ontario at the time. Okay, now you've traveled around quite a bit, training with so many different people. Who have you trained over the years to get you set for this?
On Tiger Muay Thai in Thailand, land of Muay Thai in North York and Ontario. I've got my yoga certification in India, Brazil. I lived in for 6 months, Gracie, Floripa. Just really like a whole bunch of different places, like all over the globe. Lots of learned from a lot of different coaches all over, and a lot of great training partners have helped me get here.
So your handle on Twitter says, "I love traveling and martial arts," which is exactly what you basically described. Do you plan on continuing to travel, or are you going to set base home now and just deal with everything in PEI?
I like having everything centralized at one location, and that's what PEI has. They have the wrestling, the striking, the jiu-jitsu all in one place, but I still enjoy backpacking and exploring and training. So I'll maybe headed back to Thailand again, and with probably a brief stop to Montreal on the way or something like that.
So I was going to ask you about Montreal, and there's so many different gyms globally right now. There's a very good one, obviously, in Montreal with TriStar. There's Greg Jackson's gym with Team Winklejohn as well. There's so many options eventually for you. Is that a situation you'd look at, fight by fight, say, you know what, maybe I'll do a training camp at TriStar, or maybe I'll just do everything here?
Yeah, we'll most likely do everything here majority of the time. I'm planning a trip with my head coach, Paul Abel, to go down to Montreal, like training with Crew Ash down in Montreal. He's just a phenomenal Muay Thai instructor, and perhaps Team Sahabi down there, go check it out at TriStar. So go do a little bit of exploring, just to train with different bodies, different guys, different coaches.
You tried out for the Ultimate Fighter Nations Canada versus Australia, but you didn't make the cut. Think about it now. You actually made your octagon debut and you were victorious. Do you sort of look back and say, you know what, things happened for a reason, or you know what, I would have loved to have been on that show?
I actually think me going to the tryouts and making it to the final stages of the tryout helped me get into the UFC. I think Joe Silva remembered me from the tryouts and remembered that, I fought well and I looked good on the pads and everything like that. And I think that's how my name came about in his head, because he remembered me from the tryouts. So I think those tryouts actually helped me get into the UFC.
All right. Now, before we let you go, I was just trying to think, we can't obviously name opponents or anything like that, or who you want to call out or anything like that. But in terms of Montreal or Halifax, does it matter who they are for you? Or is it just, let me get in there and continue to make my name?
Yeah, it doesn't really matter who they offer me. I would just like to fight either in Toronto or Halifax, and I'd be happy with either of those.
Perfect. Listen, thank you very much for your time. I want to wish you the best of luck. I look forward to running into you very, very soon.
Thanks, Joe. I really appreciate it.
There you have it, Jason Sago. Make sure you follow him online via Twitter, at Jason Sago, one of the nicest guys you'll meet in this industry. I know I say that a lot, but Jason's a really cool cat. Like I said before we brought him on the air, I did spend some time with him on the mats in a seminar with George St. Pierre up in Newmarket. It was a wonderful time, brought in by Chris Robinson. Good time. We worked on technique, a lot of standing stuff, and he's just so intelligent when it comes to mixed martial arts. Once he gets an opponent down to the ground, it could be lights out, because this guy is absolutely fantastic. And speaking of fantastic, Stephen Keynes is about to join us right now to talk about a revolution in mixed martial arts. Mr. Keynes, how are you today?
I'm very well, thank you.
Well, a mutual friend of ours in Reed Kuhn at Fightnomics recommended giving you a call to talk about your eye punch glove, and I think it's a fantastic piece of technology. Who knows where it's going to go, but how did this whole thing come about?
Well, I just sold my last startup in early 2012. I've been a big hardware fan for many years, so I decided to build a boxing glove with a sensor in it that would tell how hard I was punching. I took it to the gym, and a whole bunch of people wanted to use it. I think I ended up being in the gym for 4 hours, which is the longest time I've ever spent in a training session. From there, I got some investment. I was part of a startup accelerator program and started building a commercial version of the glove, focusing more on MMA than boxing. So now we have the 4-ounce glove that tracks the punch speed, punch impact force, and we can tell what type of punch it was, whether it was a jab, hook, or an uppercut.
Interesting. So you take a look at the design. When you put the sensors in there, I mean, I'm wondering about sensitivity. For example, have you tested it via whenever guys are grappling?
Yes, we have. There are two sensors in each glove. There's an impact sensor and a motion sensor. The impact sensor measures the force of the impact, and the motion sensor measures movement across three axes, so we can delineate punches from any other type of movement.
So in terms of a punch being thrown stand-up like a jab and or a cross that has a longer range of motion versus ground and pound, it will be able to tell the difference?
Yes, it will.
Well, this is fantastic. We're speaking to Stephen Kanes right now. You can follow him online via Twitter at Responsive Sport. Follow yours truly at Showdown Joe. Now, in terms of testing, you've got an app available. Can you talk about the overall product in terms of availability for the commercial market as well as potentially for the professional side?
Well, we're doing an Indiegogo campaign right now, selling the gloves at a discount rate to get them in the hands of some early beta testers. We're hoping mixed martial arts enthusiasts buy some. Then they're going to have 6 months. They'll be the only people in the world with our gloves, and they'll be giving us feedback and helping us improve the product. So we're doing that right now on Indiegogo. You can find it on iPunch.com and go and donate there. You'll have the gloves in October, and from there you've got 6 months alone with them.
Now, in terms of mixed martial arts in general, there's a sort of almost a tide that's beginning to turn. We're looking at the fact that the fights should no longer be judged by judges and instead be scored. Has anyone contacted you to say, look, we would love to try this out because scoring in mixed martial arts is obviously completely different than judging mixed martial arts, whereas when a punch lands, you will get a tick or you will get a number. For example, I'm looking at the screenshot or your screen here for At Responsive Sports. The actual graphic shows 44 jabs, 23 uppercuts, 17 hooks. In terms of a couple things, A, landing a strike is one thing. So you land a jab, you'll get a tick for one jab. But landing a cross, will the difference be in terms of power punches versus, you know, just jabs itself?
Yes, we can tell the difference between different levels of force. So we measure the force in pounds. It's usually between 0 and 500 pounds for each punch. And there are distinct patterns between different fighters who favor, say, right-hand jabs versus southpaws and their longer crosses.
In terms of testing the gloves out, though, I'm wondering what would happen. So I'm talking like way out in the future. Let's say this is taken to a new level. A company like the Ultimate Fighting Championship begins using these gloves. What type of, like, in terms of the sensors, what if a sensor would stop working? Has that happened yet?
It hasn't happened yet. We've had over 500 rounds of testings on a single pair of glove. And we will be having more extensive testing as well as mechanical stress testing. Uh-huh. So we haven't had any sensors fail. But for a professional version, we will have two different sensors in each glove and two different wireless transmitters in each glove. So failure wouldn't really be a possibility.
Well, that's very, very interesting. All right, in terms of short-term, mid-term, and long-term goals, what is the action plan or the business plan for the company itself?
The first plan of action is to do this beta test through Indiegogo that you can find on iPunch.com, just so we can get the first 500 or so customers using our gloves, giving us feedback, and adding new features. We have free features right now, which is a standard 3-minute round. You put your phone in your pocket, you punch away, and then at the end you can review your data, or even your trainer can watch your data come in live and give you tips based on the data. We also have an iPunch trainer, which gives audible instructions, and you have to punch along with them. You reach higher levels, and it gets a bit more difficult. Think of it as Guitar Hero meets boxing. And then we have a test of strength, which is where you get to go in the gym. Someone can borrow your gloves, and you can see who punches the hardest. So there's definite bragging rights involved there.
Absolutely.
So that's our short-term goal, is to get a beta test out, get as many people using them as possible and giving us feedback of what they want to see next from iPunch. A medium-term goal is to partner with a fight promoter such as the UFC, not necessarily even mixed martial arts. We're talking to boxing and kickboxing organizations about working with them in the future. And so you'll be able to see our stats live on screen. That will probably be sometime in the later half of next year. And long term, we're going to have a range of products at Responsive Sports across many different sports, including golf, baseball, and kickboxing.
Interesting, very interesting. In terms of the actual sensors on the gloves, now, is the glove strictly designed by you, or is it just a regular mixed martial arts glove with the sensors inserted?
It's a regular mixed martial arts glove. The sensors are inserted during the manufacturing process. We'll also have a boxing glove available because obviously you don't want to be hitting a heavy bag full force with a 4-ounce mixed martial arts glove.
Interesting. Okay, so in terms of where you are right now, we're doing the beta testing right now, do you have a specific date or time frame where you want to reach these goals, or is it just a matter of whatever happens along the way, or is it going to be a very aggressive schedule?
Well, at the moment, our schedule is very optimistic. We're hoping to have these gloves in the hands of our first beta testers in October. At the moment, we have prototypes that we're sharing along in. We're doing a lot of punching at Urban King's Gym in London. We've got the featherweight champ of the UK, Ashley Grimshaw, having a go at them. We've had lots of testers, and lots of people I can't say have tested the product because they have existing endorsements, but we've had positive feedback.
You took the next question out of my mouth. Is there anyone mixed martial arts related at the elite level that has tried the glove? If you can't mention it, you can't mention it. Any other feedback that you received from other people in the industry that are very interested in taking a look at this product that kind of gives you confidence to say, you know what, we are on the right track here?
Well, we've had some trainers have a look at it. I'll be making a trip to the US later this year to attend various fight camps and perhaps be part of preparations for some fighters. Again, I'm not able to say who at this stage, but hopefully you'll be hearing more about that soon. A lot of the stats guys, particularly Reed Kuhn, has been a great booster and supporter of our product. So there's a definite desire to get some more data coming from mixed martial arts. We hope the UFC will talk to us soon.
Well, along with Reed, you've got my support at 100% level, so hopefully we'll run into each other when you do come to North America, because I would definitely like to try these things out, and perhaps we'll feature them on the television side on UFC Central. I want to thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
There you have it. Stephen Keynes, all the way from the UK, complete different time zone, to say the least, and thank you very much to him for taking the time to join us today. All right. Thank you to him. Thank you, of course, to Jason Segu, who I'm sure would appreciate these types of gloves one day in the future, because like I said before we brought on Mr. Keynes, the future is scoring, in my opinion, for mixed martial arts and not necessarily judging. All right. Coming up after the break, we're going to hear from Spencer Kite from Sportsnet.ca as well as UFC.com to get his thoughts on the UFC in Vancouver, his home area, as well as all the stories from the world of mixed martial arts. You're listening to UFC Central on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club, the Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. UFC Central. UFC Central with Showdown Joe.
Are you ready?
Welcome back to UFC Central. I'm your host, Showdown Joe. We're talking mixed martial arts, UFC, Bellator in a moment, right here on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. And once again, I do apologize if I sound very nasally and congested. I am fighting this cold, something I must have picked up while I was in Vancouver. Then again, 26 days, the past 26 days, I've been only home for 5, so lots of traveling. Regardless, I was in Vancouver, which is Spencer Kite's town, or Spencer Kite's area, and we bring him on right now from Sportsnet.ca. Mr. Kite, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Well, I think you're lying, and so am I, because we're both fighting off this cold right now, and I don't know if it came from both of us being in Vancouver to cover the event, but we're not the only two that are falling under the weather. There's a few other people that were there, so something must have been going on in that area.
Something had to be. I can hear it in your voice. I was feeling that way yesterday. I'm feeling a little better today, so hopefully you get feeling better in the next couple days as well.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And I can't complain because I'm living a pretty good life in the dream job. But not so much for that city of Vancouver over the past weekend. Obviously, an article came out in the Vancouver Sun that kind of raised some eyebrows. Many of us were just disregarding it because it's old hat. It's not the first time we've read something like that. But what was, I mean, I'm talking globally. We saw what happened on Twitter. What was it like in Vancouver when all that jazz came out?
I got hit up by a few people from the local area and from people over here on the island, just sort of having that same reaction that I'm sure you and I had of this is ridiculous and these facts are wrong. But I think both you and I talked about it on Twitter, sort of saying that, you know, this is an argument that we had a decade ago, and these are complaints that we fielded. I think I sent something out about, you know, I'm not going to be concerned with a 1997 argument in 2014. It's her opinion. It's that writer's opinion, and she's more than entitled to it. I think there's a lot of information in it that's misguided and misleading, and sort of, you know, she wasn't credentialed for the event. She wasn't there, and so when the lead quote and the big takeaway from it is a quote from 4 years ago in Vancouver, that to me speaks to how misinformed it is and how little attention it really deserves.
Now, I've had Dana White pull me aside a few times, and I've actually spoken to Dana about this very topic, because I go through ups and downs where I'm like, I can't believe somebody would write something like that, and then I go after them, you know, obviously in a politically correct manner to explain, you know, that they are incorrect, and there's times I just give up. I don't want to deal with it anymore. It's so old. It's so passe. When you come across this kind of stuff, though, on a regular, it's not really on a regular basis, but in terms of seeing again, really? Like, again? Do you ever get riled up, or do you simply say, like, the first thing I tweeted about it was, look, it's someone else's opinion. That's fine. And if they want to get stuck in those old days, that's fine. That's up to them.
We talked about it at the province. I mean, I sent it in to my bosses, my editors at the province. As soon as it was sent to me, that's how I came across it on, I guess, Monday morning. I didn't see it Sunday. So, and we talked about it. We just said, you know, there's not really an interest to us to responding. We did great coverage throughout the week, promoting the event, recognizing the event, discussing the event from a positive angle and from just a factual angle. I was there all week, and we had Patrick Spitlinski there with me all week. And so to us, there was no real need to respond. As you said, it's one opinion. As we talked about on Twitter, as Kevin Ioli pointed out, that the TVI information is very incorrect. And so to me, it wasn't worth the energy of fighting that battle, because I think most people that understand the sport and have sort of gone through those struggles understand that a lot of what she brought up is misguided and incorrect. And so what's the point of exerting the energy to combat something, especially against someone and a group of people that just aren't ever going to get it? Like, to me, we should be focusing on continuing to expand and grow the sport rather than going back and fighting these battles, trying to convince people that clearly don't like the sport that their opinions or their perceptions are incorrect.
Couldn't have said it better myself. We're on the line right now with Spencer Kite. You're listening to UFC Central. Make sure you follow Spencer online via Twitter, at Spencer Kite. Kite is spelt with a Y, K-Y-T-E. Follow yours truly, at Showdown Joe. Now, in terms of the event in Vancouver, I did have a bittersweet taste in my mouth when I left, because obviously very sweet that I got to return to Vancouver, one of my favorite cities in the world, but bitter because, you know, people were leaving in the main event, obviously not appreciating what Demetrius Johnson was doing. There was a big roar when Rory competed, completely understandable, but there was a sense that I got that the Ultimate Fighting Championship may not be returning to Vancouver next year, or perhaps anytime soon. What's your sense?
I have the same sense, and I have that same bittersweet feeling, because the reaction that Rory McDonald got, as you said, was incredible, and it showed sort of what the apex of fandom in Vancouver can be. I mean, it was tremendous. We were both there for UFC 115 where he sort of burst onto the scene in the fight with Carlos Condit. This fight with Tyron Woodley was sort of the big momentum and the big focus going into UFC 174. And to see it go from appreciating Rory's technical performance and tremendous victory to walking out when Demetrius Johnson is defending the flyweight title and doing so in a fashion that I thought was incredible was really disheartening. I mean, I kind of said all week that I didn't think the UFC would be back, and I... That frustrates me, that upsets me, but it wouldn't surprise me, because the response wasn't there, and the interest and sort of connection to this event and what was being offered wasn't there. And so I think having fans file out during the main event sort of speaks volumes about what sort of fan interest is like right now in Vancouver and what they feel they're entitled to and what it's going to take to draw them, and that just isn't available right now.
It's also the situation that the actual event that takes place in Vancouver in June is in between two massive pay-per-views in May and in July, two cards that are generally always stacked, and sometimes the schedule doesn't work together for those events in June. Now, that's a bit of a problem for anybody, anywhere in the world. Do you think the UFC would have to stack a card in Vancouver, or at the very least, perhaps, you know, throw a John Jones in the main event, and that then, you know, the venue would sell out and people wouldn't leave in the main event?
I think it's going to take something like that. I mean, that's sort of the comments I've gotten on Twitter and online, sort of in response to some stuff that I've written post-fight, saying, well, these other cities always get these great shows. But, I mean, even I'm hearing from Toronto fans that are starting to do the, like, oh, John Jones again, like, as if seeing one of the greatest fighters in the world is this unfortunate. Do you know, like, it just, it doesn't make sense to me, and maybe it's because I'm so embedded in the sport and so focused on just wanting to see tremendous athletes on a regular basis that, you know, getting to see John Jones three of his last five fights in Toronto doesn't sound like a bad thing to me. But the reaction of fans in Vancouver is that it's going to take one of those sort of UFC 175 type cards where there's two championship fights and it's the bigger names and it's, you know, a lot of pomp and circumstance to draw people. And that's, as you said, I don't think that's going to happen. That June show does fall between Memorial Day and 4th of July, which are always going to be Vegas shows and they're always going to be big shows. And so it's almost a take what we're getting. And I know that sounds bad to some people, and that sounds like, well, why should we settle? But to me, it's better than nothing, and it's a chance to see live fights and great talents that need to be appreciated more.
Now, the whole argument about John Bones Jones, people complaining about John Bones Jones, I mean, last year I recall vividly how people were complaining to me from that were living in Toronto saying, oh, John Jones, Alexander Gustafsson, it's going to be a cakewalk for John. He's going to walk right through him. These are the same people that, you know, follow up and say, oh, I should have bought tickets. I knew it was going to be amazing. I just didn't have the time. And I said, look, guys, mixed martial arts is mixed martial arts. It is what it is. You've got to give the fighters some sort of credit. But in Vancouver, I was a little disturbed by some of the performances because already heading into the event, they'd almost had like one thumb down. So to try and reverse right. that thumb and make two thumbs up, you have to rely on the fighters. Are you sort of surprised it didn't turn out that way?
Yeah, I am a little bit. I mean, anytime you have an event, you hope for the best and sort of wait and see what you get. I mean, to me, this card sort of played out at its, maybe not its absolute worst. I think it could have been worse. I think there could have been some different things that happened that would have made things worse. But it wasn't the most exciting card. We had a bunch of decisions. Some local guys, Cajun Johnson losing, sort of took the air out of the building for a little bit, especially that he was knocked out. The Andre Arlovsky-Brandon Schaub fight was pretty tepid and sort of, again, stifled any momentum that was coming off of, you know, a submission win for Kichi Kunimoto and a sort of interest you crazy finish between Ovince St. Pro and Ryan Jimmo that we weren't sure of what happened. I think it just was one of those cards that kind of fell a little flat in the cage. The action wasn't as good as it could be, and so when you go into it with people already expecting not the best to then not get stuff that really drives them out of their seat and gives you those holy heck moments that Dana White always talks about. Not sure if I'm allowed to swear on your show or not.
Well, you did use a four-letter word. It was heck, which is a lot better than what Dana uses, so I'm happy about that.
Yeah, we changed that up from what Dana usually says, but we didn't have any of those moments. We didn't have any of those knockouts that drive you out of your seat and become those highlight reel moments. And so when you don't have that and there's already sort of a negative vibe to the night going in, it's really hard to reverse it, and I think we saw that. I mean, great reaction for Rory, but then a very good fight with Demetrius Johnson and Ali Bagatinov doesn't get the response it deserves because there hasn't been any of that great big pop for the course of the night. Reminded me a little bit of UFC 149 in Calgary, where the final fight of the night was a very good fight between Henan Barao and Uriah Faber, but everything that preceded that was kind of dull and kind of slow, and so people just weren't interested by the time that main event rolled around.
You're listening to Spencer Kite right now on UFC Central. Make sure you follow Spencer online via Twitter at Spencer Kite, reminding you that the Kite is spelt with a Y, not with an I. He writes for UFC.com and Sportsnet as well, so make sure you check out his columns on sportsnet.ca/MMA. Now, you take a look at what's happening in the world of mixed martial arts. So many headlines going on. Brandon Vera was released today. A couple of different bouts being announced with Ben Henderson and Rafael Dos Anjos. Chael Sonnen given a temporary suspension. I mean, lots of stuff to talk about out there. Bjorn Rebney and Tim Danaher released from Bellator? I mean, what's caught your eye today?
The Ben Henderson fight catches my eye because I think it's a smart booking. Ben's sort of in that limbo position in that Rich Franklin zone where he's lost Anthony Pettis twice, so there's not, to me, necessarily a need. I know a lot of people were talking about a potential matchup with Khabib Nurmagomedov. To me, I didn't think that was the fight to make because it potentially burns a contender. In Khabib, I like this fight because I think we've already seen kind of where Rafael Dos Anjos fits, having fought Khabib. But the Bjorn Rebney news, I mean, that's a big one. And even if we saw sort of the writing on the wall and heard whispers of him potentially being ousted, to get it today and to get sort of he's gone, Tim Daniker's gone, the rumors of Scott Coker being the potential replacement and seeing the reaction sort of really is something that you know, catches you off guard and you have to pay attention to, and you have to see where this goes for Bellator next.
What about the story of Scott Coker potentially being inserted as the Bellator, you know, top dog? Because it's almost like history begins to repeat itself again. You know, I'm sure the UFC president, or I can't speak on behalf of Dana and Lorenzo and Frank and anyone else at the organization, but, you know, I could see a snicker when the news came out that you know, Bjorn Remney and Tim Danaher are gone. That's sort of the ha-ha-ha moment, and then potentially Scott Coker moving in. They're like, wait a second, what?
Yeah, I mean, he had a contract with Zuffa coming out of the purchase and the Strikeforce purchase a couple of years ago. Obviously, he's sort of waited out that contract in his non-compete period, and now he's rumored to be the guy that's going to come in. To me, it's a really interesting addition, because you talk to anybody that fought for Scott Coker in Strikeforce, they have nothing but positive things to say about him. We've seen that already on Twitter, sort of the reaction today as rumors have popped up that he's the guy coming in. You know, Josh Barnett tweeting how much he enjoyed working for him and that he loves him some Scott Coker. So it'd be very interesting. I mean, I look forward. He talked to us in Vancouver saying he doesn't pay attention to Bellator and doesn't care. And if we all think they're competitors, then we're crazy. It'd be interesting to see what their reaction is should Scott Coker become the guy to replace Bjorn Remney.
Well, I believe Scott Coker may have a different business model than what Bjorn Remney put out there. At the same time, I mean, Scott Coker would have to be reporting to some pretty big brass at Viacom. So it depends. We'll see. I mean, it's not even official, so we don't know just yet,
right.
But anything can happen. One thing that is official is a rematch between Gegard Mousasi and Jacare Souza. That'll go down at UFC 176. Mousasi obviously victorious in that first fight with that upkick. What do you think will happen in this rematch, or potentially what could take place at UFC 176?
Not sure what's going to happen. I mean, I think Gegard Mousasi, we saw a great performance against Mark Munoz, really came out and sort of affirmed himself as a contender in that division. Jacare has just looked so good. I mean, that first fight, as you said, an upkick finish, which isn't something we see a lot of. A lot of people at the time sort of said, bit of a fluke. So we'll get a chance to sort of see both of them having progressed, both of them having really rounded out their skill set. Jacare is the guy to me in that division that is really the scary question mark, because of his ground skills and because of the developing striking that we've seen over the last couple of years. I think it's a great co-main event, great fight to showcase on that card behind Jose Aldo and Chad Mendes for the featherweight title. And two guys that, I mean, winner of that, you have to think they're closing in on a title shot.
Well, definitely Jacare. If Mousasi can bypass Jacare, I think it's an interesting scenario, because Dana likes him. Dana really likes
right.
Mousasi. He just wishes he'd be a little bit more aggressive. He did so against Mark Munoz, but you know, Musasi's that stoic guy in the cage. He's like Fedor back in the day. He's got no emotion whatsoever. Before you know it, the fight's over. I mean, the guy's an absolute
right.
animal. A couple other things that I've been looking at, especially in terms of Brandon Vera being cut from the organization. I saw that. I think we all saw the writing on the wall there. What's your take on that?
I mean, I think it's one of those things that at times you kind of forgot that Brandon Vera was on the roster. It's been a while since he's fought. Had that his last sort of good fight that you remember is the fight against Shogun Hua on the August Fox card a couple years ago. I think Brandon Vera, unfortunately, is always going to sort of be a bit of a punchline when you look back on him as that guy that said, I'm going to have two belts and two divisions, and then never was able to put it together. I think injuries and some outside of the cage stuff really hampered his development and hampered what he was able to do, because there was a time where he looked absolutely phenomenal and looked like that guy that was going to be either the next guy at heavyweight or light heavyweight, but was never able to put it together. And so to come off a loss to Ben Rothwell in what will be his final bout, I think a little bit disappointing overall is the way I would characterize Brandon Vera's career and sort of UFC run.
Now, let's talk about the next pay-per-view with Spencer here. Now, we had Alexis Davis on UFC Central. Jack and I threw out some you know, more or less softball questions just to get her going. the hard questions will be on a feature that I sat down with her when I was in Vegas. So people wondering, oh, why were you guys too kind to her? It's just part of the show. Relax, everybody. You'll see the in-depth feature a little later. But obviously a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu taking on Ronda Rousey, a former Olympian, someone that if she grabs a hold of you, you will fly wherever she tells you to fly. What do you make of that co-main event? And can Alexis become the third champion to come out of Canada?
I really like the fight. I had actually talked to Alexis a couple times for Sportsnet, sort of coming out of Ronda's win over Sarah McMahon when there was all the talk of Gina Carano and Holly Holm and maybe Cyborg. And she had said, you know, what about me? This is a fight that I think I've earned. I've put in my time. I've got my victories inside the octagon. So really excited to see her get this chance. I think a lot of people, when the women's bantamweight division was brought into the UFC, kind of tabbed Alexis as maybe the person that can beat Ronda because of her skills on the ground. We haven't actually seen that much of it in the UFC thus far. She's been content to sort of stand and throw her last couple fights, but as you said, black belt in Brazilian and Japanese jiu-jitsu, very comfortable on the ground. A lot of her wins prior to the UFC came via submission and via her ability to control fights on the ground. I think the big thing is going to be sort of just being comfortable in that moment. I mean, one of the things that the opponents of Ronda have struggled with is just the idea and the specter of stepping into the cage with Ronda Rousey, who wins in the first round via armbar, and you hear about it, and it's sold and pushed as it should be because she's been so dominant throughout the lead-up to the fight. So if Alexis can just keep her wits about her and just stay centered and sort of not caught up in the moment, I think it can be a very interesting fight.
Chris Weidman taking on Lyoto Machida, and I had a conversation with a friend of mine who's not sold on Chris Weidman just yet. I said, well, why not? And he gave me a really good explanation. I understand where he's coming from. And in essence, what he basically said is, well, I know Chris Weidman's undefeated, great fighter. Takes on Anderson Silva for the title. No one gave him a chance. He knocks him out. But that was Anderson Silva being silly. I said, okay, fair enough. And then the second time they have the rematch, we want to see if Chris Weidman's for real. We want to see him defeat Anderson Silva, and Anderson's shin shatters in the cage. I said, you know what, you got a pretty good point. I see where you're going, but Chris Weidman's a bad, bad man. He's like, I know he's a bad man, but is he truly the UFC middleweight champion? I said, well, you know what, I'm going to talk to Spencer on my show, and I'm going to throw it out there. I'm sold on Chris Weidman. I'm sure you're sold on Chris Weidman, but the overall thought of Chris is, does he still have to prove that he's the middleweight champion of the world and taking on Lyoto Machida?
I think ultimately, and this is unfortunate for me to say, I think ultimately he does, because a lot of people share that opinion of, well, that first fight with Anderson was Anderson clowning, and if he had fought for real and if he didn't have his hands down, then maybe it's a different outcome. And again, as you said, with UFC 168, with the unfortunate leg injury, we didn't get to see sort of a full fight from Anderson again. Eerie that they ended within 2 seconds of each other in the second round, both of those fights. To me, it's similar to sort of the Tyron Woodley fight with Carlos Condit, where everybody says, yeah, well, the injury, and that would have... Tyron Woodley was winning every second of that fight, and you can't take it away from him. To me, Chris Weidman is legit. I've seen enough of him to believe that he is the undisputed middleweight champion, but I think there are people that still want to see him tested against a guy like Lyoto Machida, tested against Anderson again when he's fully healthy, when there isn't a freak injury, when he's not, you know, fighting with his hands down and pantomiming that he's hurt before he gets knocked out. I think a dominant performance against Lyoto Machida quiets a lot of that and solidifies his standing as sort of the undisputed and unquestioned, I guess is the better word, middleweight champ.
You mentioned Tyron Woodley. It'll be the final question before we let you go. I'm drawing a blank right now. Were you sitting on Media Row on Saturday?
Yes.
Okay. Did you notice Tyron Woodley's corner at all? Because with one thing I leaned over and I told Frank Trigg and my producer for the show, I said, you guys noticing the corner, the four guys that are in the, or three or four guys that are walking with Tyron Woodley and his cornermen? It looks like something is wrong here. Something doesn't seem right. No one is hyped up. No one is amped. It's not even a look of calm. It's a look of, uh-oh. What's going on here? Did you notice any of that?
I didn't notice any of that during the fight. One of the things that caught me sort of surprising through the week was the lack of Arnold Chong in Tyron's corner, who's been his strength and conditioning coach throughout and over the last few years. It was surprising for me not to see Arnold here this week. He's been a guy that has been with Tyron for a while. But in sort of hanging out with Tyron and sort of gauging his temperature throughout the week, he seemed hyped up, he seemed ready to go, and then as you said, sort of Saturday felt a little flat and felt a little not necessarily there. I don't know if, you know, there was some talk on press row of he looks like he maybe got injured early in the fight. I talked to him afterwards. He didn't, obviously a guy that isn't going to make excuses and say, you know, this was wrong. Just said Rory fought a good fight. And,
oh yeah, but, Rory fought a great fight in my opinion,
yeah,
as well.
Rory fought a phenomenal fight, and I mean, I disagree with Dana White's assessment that Tyron Woodley choked. I think Rory McDonald fought a great fight. I think Tyron just got just wasn't on his game. I mean, in this sport, sometimes it's your night, sometimes it's not. I think he got pushed backwards early and just couldn't get out of that funk.
Well, listen, I want to thank you very much for coming on the show with us today. I completely apologize for not having you on earlier. I'll give you credit. You did call me out, and I went back, and I'm like, you're right. Never had Spencer on, but I'm so glad you're on, and we'll try and make you a regular contributor because your opinion is absolutely fantastic. Even though we may disagree on a few things, I love having you on the air. Thank you very much for joining us today.
I appreciate it, Joe. Get feeling better.
There you have it. Spencer Kite, thank you to him. Thank you to Jason Sago and Mr. Stephen Keynes. That's a wrap for us. You've been listening to UFC Central on the Sportsnet Fan Radio Network. This fire in the light of the sky.